It's a football. It's a football.
If you don't know football, you shouldn't be with a microphone in your hand.
Hello and welcome to Soccer Sense, the Sensible Football Podcast, where I'm joined again, as usual, by our usual suspects, making up one third of the panel from Bangalore. It's Vishal, who's got
hey guys.
who's got managed this as his display name today. So the Vishal display names are becoming a thing this season.
Might as well be consistent somewhere.
And from London, of course, where it appears to be a little wet, a bit windy, but unfortunately not Wednesday night. So the 3W trifecta is not exactly complete. Nonetheless, it's current.
Yeah, well, at least we're consistent with the weather.
Okay, so gentlemen, we have had quite an interesting week in the Premier League, in the sense that nothing interesting really happened in terms of results, because most of them were quite expected. I think Manchester United beating Fulham was a great
the upset
for the upset of the week. But we did have, of course, Liverpool winning their game, and fairly easily at that, because it was Ipswich Town after all. We also had Arsenal grind out a hard-fought victory to keep themselves in that title race. Amazingly, probably the most fun result in one sense of the weekend was Bournemouth, who of course have been one of the high-flying teams, and Liverpool face them next. Absolutely, well, carried out a little bit of a deforestation because it was 5-0 to them, to the Cherries against Nottingham Forest, which kind of, just underscores just how good Bournemouth themselves have been. And underlying all of these and completing the week of narratives with, of course, the spiciest narrative of them all, which is always the case with them, where Tottenham Hotspur, because they lost at home to Leicester City. Remember, guys, Leicester City, who have been struggling with relegation, were put above the relegation zone by a 2-1 win against Tottenham Hotspur. And to make things even better, it was Jamie Vardy with one of the goals.
Showed them how many titles.
Also did not waste any time at all in reminding the Spurs faithful, if they are faithful anymore, that
I think everybody knew what he was saying.
So all that obviously shifted, you know, the spotlight onto Ange Postecoglou in Spurs' case. Of course, Ruben Amorim himself, after that win, he came, he's turned 40. And once again, we have spoken about Ruben Amorim earlier, that it is scary when the manager of a club is that close to the age of the panelists here on Soccer Sense. But the only heartening thing of it was that he said, managing Manchester United, he feels more like 50 right now than 40.
Imagine us fans then. He's just been there for 2 months.
And so my mental age is definitely that much.
And my favorite thing about this whole trope of, like you're saying, imagine the fans. I think Star Sports has been very heavily leaning into that. And I think they've been advertising the big games of the month of January, saying that, oh, the best teams in the Premier League are going to test the patience of their opponents and their fans. And then they showed matches featuring Arsenal and Manchester United, which I cannot think can be a coincidence.
Not by chance at all.
So all that is to say, people, that obviously there's a lot riding on the managers we spoke about, Nottingham Forest, in one of the early episodes of this season of this podcast, where we discussed how they're doing things old school. Of course, City have been under the spotlight and so on. So I just wanted to talk about managers. And like Vishal, you said, you wanted to talk about what the archetype of a manager was and what they are like now what were they were expected to be, and what really is the role of a modern manager in that sense. So I'll begin with something that Arsene Wenger wrote in his autobiography, which, by the way, is a cracking read. So he mentioned about sort of what he was doing at Arsenal, and he said, behind this passion and immense pleasure, constant effort was required, and it was accompanied by moments of pain and loneliness that were sometimes difficult to take. But all art contains an element of pain and requires a taste for effort. Today, huge emphasis is placed on winning and losing, and throwaway comments take on exaggerated importance. People tend to disregard the massive amount of work required for each match. And he said, I was prepared to pay a heavy price for Arsenal, and the time has shown that I did just that. So, you know, Wenger paints himself as sort of this sacrifice at the altar of service of football, because I think in the next line he talks about service of football and all that. So from the time of Wenger, when he came in and he revolutionized the managerial role in one sense when he joined Arsenal in 96, to where we are with managers now. So we'll get started with you, Vishal, because this topic was your brainchild.
Yeah, I think it's been such an interesting evolution. I don't know if evolution is even the right word, but it's been such an interesting progression, right? Because if you look at how the manager all the way going back to the 60s till now, the manager was the all-encompassing individual who ran the club top to bottom for all practical purposes, right? And with time, that seems to have diluted a little, because he's now more and more focused as he's truly the coach, right? Like if you're seeing more and more coaching that's being paid attention to, and not necessarily the commercial side of things. The director of football has come in. There are many more roles that are coming into football, and it's truly a corporate. Football clubs are corporates now, right? There is more hierarchy in place than anything else, and sometimes the hierarchy doesn't even include people who understand football, and that's quite interesting. And the most successful clubs, interestingly, are the ones where the managers were the sole point of contact in terms of saying all success was the manager's responsibility, all failure was the manager's responsibility, right? And I think that's the most interesting progression that's really come from manager. And earlier, I think it was more about team management. Now it's all about tactical and strategic prowess that a manager needs to show. Each manager is trying to outthink one another, right? While earlier it was mostly trying to get the best set of players and try to outwork somebody. Now it's a outthink somebody almost approach. And that, I think, is a very interesting progression of where management is going.
Yeah, and so I'll bring in Karan here. And since Karan is in the land where, you know, a lot of bands were born, and not far away from where he is, the Rolling Stones were also also born at one point in time, not to mention, you know, the likes of Iron Maiden and, of course, the Beatles and so on. Now, there was a mythical quality to a band manager at one point of time, Karan. And again, like, because Vishal said the 1960s is why I'm grabbing for that parallel. And we seem to have seen the evolution of that role as well, simply as music has evolved and what it has become now. Because you could see that, you know, Arsene Wenger likens football to art, and you could think of, you know, rock music as art as well. But nowadays, a lot of music is packaged commerce, which a lot of football also is. So your take on where the managerial role lies?
I think you hit the nail on the head, because in many ways, you know, the music industry itself kind of mirrors a lot that has happened in the football world from a managerial perspective as well, in terms of the responsibilities. I mean, just recently I was reading Pink Floyd's Making of the Dark Side of the Moon album, and in that it clearly kind of describes the different personnel that were actually involved back then to probably the number of people actually involved in the making of an album, other than just the musicians these days, is manifold. Because now you have, now even before bands decide to kind of, you know, sit down and start recording, you have the marketing teams, the advertising teams, the designers, et cetera. And there are a whole bunch of people. And you also have, you have a particular band manager, and then you have specific agents who are involved. So it's multifold right now. And similarly in football as well, like Vishal was saying, from what it was in the 60s to the 70s, where, you know, it was the manager who was kind of taking most of the decisions, to these days, it's kind of a more decentralized role wherein your responsibilities are kind of shared by multiple people. But the irony is, as much decentralization as that has happened when it comes to a football manager, the responsibility, or in terms of the accountability at the end of the day, has actually increased for the football manager, regardless of the fact that, you know, his responsibilities are shared with other people.
Yeah, which brings us back to this point, right? That their role is probably the one that's thrust mostly into the spotlight, Vishal.
Yeah.
I think Karan touched on something very interesting, right? Especially the point on responsibility and accountability. It's quite intense, because I think they seem to bear the brunt of decisions that are not being made by them anymore, right? It's unfortunate, but I have to refer to the United situation. Where at least 4 to 5 different managers have spoken about who they wanted versus who they got, right? And then they're expected to manage that, because a manager's as good as his players, and who can represent his thought, his idea on the ground or on the field. And it's becoming more and more a trend, right? Because these people who are sitting in a corporate box are really trying to make decisions basis budgets, basis business goals and requirements. And the business of football might actually be diluting the power of the manager. And I think that's also scary to a great extent, because very few clubs now trust the manager to make the right decision, right? They almost think that the manager's job is to only look at the football and not necessarily take the decisions in terms of budgets and players.
Yeah,
I think that's a very important point that he made, that the financial aspect of it has actually made a big, big difference from what it was in the 60s. Because, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, money wasn't part of the game back in the 60s and 70s, but not to the extent that it is now. So much so that, you know, football, like Vishal said, it's become more a corporation, it's become more a business now. So the actual financial pressure adds a completely new dimension to the expectations that are placed on not just a manager, but even the team as such.
Yeah, and so it boils down to the fact that the manager's role now obviously comes down to the football on the field, but it becomes a week in, week out thing, where you're only looking at a certain tactical level. Obviously, we've seen different kinds of managers, those who are more rigid in their tactics. I mean, there is a great, I think, Michael Spicer video about Ange Postecoglou, where he mimics Ange Postecoglou appearing on a cooking show, and they ask him for different dishes, and he always like produces carrot cake or something like that. It says, no, this is all I can make. Like, this is what you asked for. And then, of course, there are famous managers who are also able to kind of adjust on the field. I mean, probably problem solvers in that sense. And Ancelotti is a great example of somebody who solves problems on the go, on the field, which obviously is a great trait to have. But given the short-termism, you know, how do we reconcile the two things? So Vishal, will bring you in on two interesting positions, and somebody that you've talked about earlier or pointed out earlier, that Arne Slot and Liverpool, when he moved in, it was a question of, you know, probably lack of experience. The squad was not exactly A+. So everybody said, Arne Slot is going to have a bit of a baptism by fire. So far, I mean, you would be forgiven if you were Arne Slot for thinking that, hey, this is not too hard. So what explains maybe his success, and, you know, potentially what challenges is he likely to face?
His success is fairly simple, right? Because one, he came into a team that he inherited, and I think he spent time to really understand the team. He changed the style of football, right? He's not playing Klopp style of football at all, not even remotely close. However, he's bringing out the best in a bunch of players, right? Klopp possibly had 2 to 3 core players who without performing, Liverpool would fall flat. If you look at Liverpool's season this season, Luis Diaz started off on fire, then has fallen off the pace a little, but he has understood that Salah is the one guy who's constantly going to give you the top-notch performances. Might not be in terms of absolute 90 minutes of top-notch, but in bursts. And at the same time, he's activated his midfield beautifully because there's goal contributions coming in from midfield far more than earlier. So he's made it a team again, right? And more importantly, he's stuck to their core identity without really changing too much, using pace, using the passing prowess of the midfielders, using the wing backs beautifully. So he's not changed much, but he's changed just enough, right? Now, while that's working really well, the challenge is to sustain this because Ancelot, as much as he's famous for being a tactical genius, he's still new to the Premier League. Lots of managers are still getting to know him and possibly will understand him a little more next season. So sustenance is always key. So is he going to be able to sustain this level of success with limited financial push that's coming in from Liverpool at this point in time? That's going to be a challenge. But again, he's not tried to come and become this larger-than-life personality, right? Has understood his role, is fulfilling his role.
Yeah, which brings us back to the same tension, right, Karan, that again, it's accountability is with the manager in terms of results on the field, because that's the main currency with which a team's popularity is floating or sinking. And obviously, that's related to the larger sports fandom and the commerce that comes with it. But then he does not have control on certain moving parts. So it's sort of like Formula One where, you know, you as a driver can obviously, there's a lot of things you can do, but ultimately somebody else is putting a car together and there's a huge team that's putting the entire race strategy and everything else together that you have to kind of manage.
I mean, that's so, like feet. That's feet Kimi Raikkonen during his McLaren days.
But that is what, that, you know, not everybody can be a Kimi in terms of like individual style or the sheer skill and the doggedness that way. Football is a giant machine and it's the smaller cog here. So to bring in more rock references, like, is there any rage against the machine now, or how do modern managers adapt going forward? Because I mean, I don't know if in 10 years we'll have this podcast, but if we had one, what would we be discussing there in terms of managing?
Probably AI and football at that time. No, but I think
you're right. Manchester United will still be horrible.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. But I think the main challenge now, the way you look at it now, is there are a lot of things which is not under a manager's control today. But I think the best that they can hope for is once they come in, just to worry about the things that is under their control and hope for the best, unfortunately. But I think there are also the best managers are those who kind of thrive under these situations and are still able to get the best out of their squad. And I'm not saying this doesn't necessarily have to be a trophy winning team. It can even be a manager who's taking over a relegation team and is able to kind of overachieve and, you know, stave off relegation. Somebody like a Tony Pulis, who's known for that, or somebody like, or maybe somebody like a Sam Allardyce as well, kind of thrived on that. So you don't necessarily have to be a trophy winning manager to be considered a great, right? So it's more about how you're able to adapt to the situation in which you are and are still able to get the results that are required to achieve the team's goals. So control what is, worry about what is under your control, and the rest of it, you know, you'll have to kind of, you know, hope that it works out for you. And the one other thing that I will add is that one of the best things that a manager actually does, one of the best qualities a manager can actually have, is they say, you know, they kind of always showcase the success to be that of their players and take on the failures upon themselves. And the best example was actually when India lost the final in the 2023 World Cup, where Rahul Dravid was the one who actually went and did the interview. And I'm sure if India had actually won that final, Rohit Sharma would have been the one doing that interview. So that is the perfect
example. Yeah, I mean, we saw Rahul it Dravid in the T20 World Cup, so we have the counterfactual also.
There you go. So I think that's one of the best qualities that a manager can actually have. So, I mean, irrespective of the sport, right? I mean, there are certain qualities that coach/manager need to have. So the best ones always have those.
So, I mean, the timeless quality of, let's say, somebody like a Bill Shankly's philosophy, and I'm bringing that again because I'm partial towards Bill Shankly for obvious reasons. But you know, his famous quote about that football is a simple game that's based on, you know, controlling the ball and making yourself available to receive the ball at a particular moment. It's like that simple. And that obviously has not changed from a tactical point of view. And I think one of my favorite quotes of him is about the point you made about pressure, right? And I'll probably have to look this quote up, but something on the lines of where he said that, you know, pressure is trying to stave off relegation, like at 50 shillings a week and so on. Because European Cup final and, you know, title and all that, that's not pressure. That's the reward. The real pressure is what you're doing in the trenches, which I think is a timeless quality that would remain no matter how much the game changes. Like whether it is AI, whether it is analytics, whether it is anything else that's bringing more to the game. Ultimately, football will remain a game which is in the flesh, unless, I mean, we start playing it in the metaverse for some reason.
No, I agree.
So, gentlemen, closing thoughts on that. I mean, second half of the season, we are going to see the best and the worst come out of managers. There are some sacrificial lambs through the season. We've already had some. We've had like a flurry of managerial changes, particularly in the Premier League for sure, and across other leagues as well. So let's look forward to next season. That is this one of those tipping points where we see next season managers wisening up to this fact that they have to balance all of these things and taking things in?
I don't think so, because I think there's so little in their control that it's the dilemma, Stockholm syndrome, right? Because they love the game too much. They also understand how the game is evolved and possibly not in their favor, but they're not going to be able to stay away from it. They are going to come back to it, right? You've seen too many managers who've been sacked abruptly keep coming back. Jose Mourinho is a perfect example. I think his last 3-4 jobs have all been just poor decision-making by owners and management, right? But he still keeps like terrible decisions. Look where he's managing right now. But he's back. He's doing it. I don't think managers can stay away from the game. Are they going to learn? Mostly not. The situation they manage going to get better? In some clubs, yes. Most clubs, no. So it's going to be, like Wenger rightly called, they are going to have a price to pay. And it's about them taking the call if they want to continue paying the price or, you know, like Gen Z says, seek work-life balance.
So quick word from you, Karan, before we close the podcast for this week.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't think it's really going to change. I think what I would say is, you know, yes, managers do keep coming back, because I think what happens is you do this for so long, right? And it almost becomes sort of like a drug that you cannot stay away from. So if they were to kind of, you know, just say, you know what, pack in the bag, this is just not worth it. They're going to wake up the next morning not knowing what to do. So I think they're just addicted to it in many ways. So, you know, I think that's just something that they're going to have to live with. That is the world that they are in now.
Right. So we'll have to probably close with that great quote from the Oscar-winning film that was Brokeback Mountain, that I wish I knew how to quit you. Or ending with Arsene Wenger's words himself, which was in the same paragraph where he said that, you know, it was my choice to put myself totally at the service of football, because clearly it's not a normal person's job, no matter how much you try to draw other parallels or look at it as a corporate job. And much as sports fanatics like us are kind of addicted to the torture and the pain of being a sports fan, probably it's the same for managers. Of course, we'll be ready to revisit all those tortures and everything else that comes with it come next week, because that's what it is like in this merry-go-round or the turning wheel that is football. Meanwhile, that's all the time we have this week. This is Tariq signing off from Soccer Sense, along with Karan from London.
Football, bloody hell.
And Vishal.
Sorry, Gen Z. Work-life balance is important.